Right, welcome back to the next section on our series about copyright and licenses, and now we'll talk about TVization, which Johan will introduce to us.
Exactly. So we learned about TVization when talking about GPL licenses. So it's something being addressed in GPL v3. So I choose to call this a story about following licenses to the letter. See, TVization actually refers to the TiVo company because they did something. So in order to understand this, you need to understand how a computer starts. So first,
you just press the button.
Exactly. you give it power. And this means that a bootloader starts. Usually I have multiple stages of bootloaders even so. So you have something that's sort of deeply embedded into the processor itself that knows how to find the first bootloader and then start loading software.
We're always going to piss someone off by simplifying it here.
Exactly. But you get a bootloader. And the job of this bootloader is to load the kernel, usually Linux, in this case Linux. And then the kernel starts, initializes stuff, and then it goes to an init process. And this is where you sort of hit user space and magic happens and you can start using it. So in most modern desktop system, init would be systemd. But it could also be the classic sysv init.
It could also be openrc.
Yeah, or a binary of your choice.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's basically a program that the kernel starts. And the thing is, looking at a classic Linux system, we know that the Linux kernel, free software, we know that the user space has a lot of free software in it. Pun intended.
Now you're using the GNU logo on the kernel, which might be misleading because it's not GNU software.
It's not GNU software, but it's GPL. It's free software, yes.
It's GNU as in GNU General Public License, but that's a bit of a lie as well.
Exactly.
We will always piss someone off by simplifying. And I mean, user space will be mixed. The thing is that there are open source bootloaders, but we have to look a bit at what's the task of the bootloader. So you initialize the hardware. So for instance, the kernel assumes that the memory exists when you start. So you need to initialize clocks and stuff for external RAM. It loads the kernel from wherever it sits if it needs to be loaded. It ensures that the kernel is somewhat correct. So you can do like a checksum or something of the kernel. And it prepares to pass some configuration data to the kernel. So if you look at your desktop system, again, you probably have grub or something running there. And you can actually send like a little command line to the kernel. And then once all of that has been initialized and in the places agreed with the kernel, it jumps into the kernel that then can sort of pick up from there and take over the computer. The thing is that ensuring the integrity of the kernel can mean many things. So what TiVo did was that you take the source code and build your kernel binary. But the TiVo hardware won't run that, or the bootloader won't load that, because it also checks that the kernel binary has been signed by a private key.
And does it in hardware, or how does it do it?
I don't know exactly how it does, but it does it, I guess it does it inside the bootloader. That would be the easiest place to do it. So instead of just calculating a checksum and seeing that this kernel is correct, it calculates a checksum and ensures that this kernel has been signed by a key that it knows. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, what TiVo then did was that they took the source code and provided all their patches and everything so you could recreate your own kernel binary, which means that they have technically fulfilled their obligations in the GPL, but they withheld the private key, which means that you cannot create a kernel that you can actually boot on the hardware.
But this is a company that lived on selling hardware, I guess. And as far as I remember, the reason for doing this was to prevent people from not recording the commercials or something like that. Am I right?
I mean, it's a set-top box. So, I mean, I guess they feed through copyrighted streams of media, be it movies, be it whatnot. So basically to to guarantee to their customers that you couldn't turn it into a recorder or to sort of record stuff freely.
Mm-hmm.
They had to do this trick, they felt.
Wait, to their customers or to their... They were the customer of those companies.
Yeah, I would say the providers of TV series.
The providers of the TV series. I don't know about the exact business model. Yeah.
Because the users would be the people who buy their set-top box. So it was not...
Yeah, exactly. So the end user wasn't really benefited by this. But at the same time, without this, they probably wouldn't have had a set-top box at all.
Yeah.
So this is something that the GPL... prohibits because the GPL V3 prohibits because they explicitly say that you have to provide the installation instructions and everything that you need. So the private key and how to use the private key and how to actually get the stuff onto the hardware. The interesting thing is that the reaction from Torvald, the kernel creating, was that I want to make it clear that DRM is perfectly okay with Linux. And he thinks there are quite valid reasons to sign and verify kernel images. So in this mail, there's a link at the bottom of this picture here. He basically says that you actually check the checksum of the kernel when you trust my master Git tree. That's also a checksum. So how can we distinguish between a good and a bad checksum? So he feels that this is a slippery slope and he does not want to put anything extra on it. And hence the kernel is GPL V2. And the reaction of the FSF was to create GPL V3, where you have section 6 basically saying installation information for user products are the methods, procedures, authorization keys, and other information required to install and execute a modified version of the covered work. So they explicitly address this and they explicitly call this TV authorization. And that's one of the main differences between GPL 2 and 3.
Wait, is it called TVization in the license or just a...
It's called that by the FSF. I'm not sure if it's explicitly called that in the license.
Yeah, I don't think it is, but yeah, might be.
No, you're probably right, because Section 6 covers more than that. I think that's where you cover what a distribution is and so on, and...
Yeah,
this then comes under all the sub-paragraphs that define the distribution.
But it's an interesting thing here that it says a user product, which means it has to be something that is made for an end user. So, for example, if you create something and you then sell it to a company where there would never be an actual end user, the TVization thing is not really... a trigger from what I've heard talking exactly. to lawyers and so on.
It, in the dot 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 here, that is actually covered. So it has to be a product to be used in a home, I think it says, or a domestic product or a product to be used in a home.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they add something that, like, if you can't really tell if it's supposed to be used in a home or not, then it probably is. So it's sort of defensively written in that way. But if you build something like a tractor or something that you obviously don't use in a domestic scenario, then this doesn't apply. You're correct. And that sort of also links into what we've been talking about, the difference between free software and open source, that free software is more about the rights of the end user. So if you sell it to another company, the Free Software Foundation or the GPL doesn't really address that use case as strongly as if you were to sell it to an individual.
All right, I guess that's all for now. Thanks, Johan.
Thank you, and see you in a future episode.